Hello, and welcome to the Mostly Normal Gamers podcast, episode 182. We are recording Monday, November 13th, 2023. I'm your host, Chris, with an exclamation point, and today I'm joined by James, the Lord of BLP Entertainment. James, we were just talking about how it's been literally months since we recorded together. How's it going?
It's good. I think it's 183, technically.
Am I off on my numbers?
Yeah, you are. I think John corrected you on a previous one. But yes, regardless, it's fine. I'm
good.
It bugs
me. I want to know. I want to be right.
It's 183. Because he corrected... You said 181 last episode, and his tweet was like, everybody relax, it's actually 182 or something like that. So I think we're on 183.
Okay, well now I'm updating all of the documentation so that the next time I make a doc, it's accurate. There you, how's that?
Sounds good. And it could be because John doesn't use a doc half the time anymore, so maybe he didn't create one for 182. So it's really John's fault.
John's going off the dome, making me look like an amateur. He's like a freestyle rapper, like Lil Wayne in his prime.
But yeah, I'm good. It's been a while. Haven't spoken to you, so it was nice to catch up for the 10 minutes before we started.
Yeah. We burned pod, as they say in the industry. But what, you know, I think it's more important to catch up offline. So anyways, we're going to jump into the lowdown because I think we both have a lot of games to talk about, as well as I have so many exciting things that I want to tell the world about. So if you want to be a part of the conversation or if you have a pressing question that you want us to weigh in on, please reach out to us anywhere other than Twitter. But if you have to use Twitter, it is at MN Gamers Podcast. If you don't use Twitter, like me, please send us an email the good old-fashioned way to podcast@mostlynormalgamers.com. That's our website. You can check us out there. You can also leave us a voicemail or text if you want to engage with the show at 507-291-2991. You can check out old back issues of our Mostly Normal Gamers monthly Substack at mngamers.substack.com. Look for a game of the year wrap-up, roundup issue, as I always try to do, whether or not I'm active on it, in your inboxes and there as well. That will be coming probably towards the end of December, if not start of January. I'm not going to make any promises about ongoing stuff there because I am still a student right now. You can check out our VODs at the Mostly Normal Gamers YouTube channel and watch us live when we stream on Twitch at twitch.tv/mostlynormalgamers. With that, I think I tackled the majority of our business.
Yeah, it's a lot now.
It's a lot. It's a mouthful. Several mouthfuls.
Yeah, it's holy cow.
I want to hear, what have you been playing, James? What's going on, man?
I feel like it's been so long because I have so many completed games on my list this time.
I see that. Those are games that I would love to one day play for the first time, let alone complete.
So I beat Spider-Man 2. I think John technically beat it before me. He posted, like, he's like, I platinumed it, and I was like, oh, I'm just finishing up the game now. And so, I don't know if he's talked about it. I can't remember if he talked about it, but yeah, I played it. Phenomenal game. It's just more Spider-Man, so if you like the Marvel Spider-Man and Miles Morales, you're gonna like this one. And I think they just absolutely crushed it for what they were going for. I had an absolute blast, and I think it's my favorite.
Your favorite of the Insomniac Spider-Man games, or your favorite Spider-Man game ever?
I mean, it's hard to say. Like, yeah, I think it's my favorite Spider-Man game ever, but mostly because I think Marvel's Spider-Man and Miles Morales were, like, my favorite Spider-Man. I think they topped Spider-Man 2 for me. Spider-Man 2 is great. It's nostalgia, but
yeah,
I don't know. It's the what they did with the Insomniac games were just phenomenal, and all the cast and everything. It's it's great, and the acting is, like, superb, and they fixed, I think John mentioned it, they fixed the Mary Jane Watson sections where you kind of feel, like, useless, and it's just stealth. Now she's got a little bit more to her, and it's much more engaging in those sections, so it's less of a slog, if that makes sense.
Those sections, like, so I've never finished the first Spider-Man game.
Oh, what?
No. I got very obsessive with, like, going around and completing stuff to find costumes and abilities.
Yeah.
And then I was, like, playing through the narrative, and I think, spoilers for Spider-Man 1, I haven't played it in, like, 4 years. I'm not going to remember any of this. I don't even remember where I left off. But I remember, like, Mr. Negative's, like, starting to run amok. And then I'm pretty sure, like, Dr. Octopus is, like, alluded to have, like, started maybe, like, you know, your mentor, Otto Octavius, is alluded to have, like, started losing his marbles. That's it. Like, I did not make it remotely far into the actual narrative of that game because I was so fixated on trying to complete all of the minute side quests and get all of the suits. And then when I would be playing the narrative, I would get to those Mary Jane sections and it just felt like somebody slammed the e-brake in my car.
Yes.
Like, and I think she's like I think the mystery that she was investigating was interesting. I think she's a great, like, well-acted character in those games. I like her as this investigative person. Boy, like, I just don't want to play, like, a really disempowered stealth game in the middle of my Spider-Man fantasy.
Yeah. No, and I think that's a general consensus. And while they didn't take those sections out, they actually made them pretty damn engaging, and I really enjoyed them. I liked them the first time I played through Spider-Man, but doing follow-up, like, I played through Spider-Man before the release of Spider-Man 2 on stream, and those sections, I remember being like, I didn't want to do them. I wanted to play Spider-Man, right? So, like, I remember trying to, like, just get through them as fast as possible, and of course, as soon as you start doing that, you're making mistakes, and you're getting caught, right, exactly. And it's like, oh, fuck, now I got to do all this again. And it just, like, compounded. I was like, yeah, these parts were rough. And I think I handled them so delicately the first time I played it because it was all new to me, and I was okay with a bit of a stealth slowdown. But yeah, going through it on a second playthrough, I was starting to see how, like, oh yeah, this wasn't perfect. And in Spider-Man 2, she can fight now. She can get caught more than once. Like, so, like, you get caught once and you run and hide rather than, I think you can, like, technically take 2 hits from an enemy. And so, like, essentially you get caught, you run and hide, and you have, like, a sort of saving grace rather than just trigger cutscene and you're caught. And then, you're a little more aggressive. She, like, mentions, like, training with Silver Sable, which was a character from the first game. They went to Samekia, and she wrote a book about it, about its, like, I guess, like, the political environment over in Samekia. And so because I think Silver Sable, if I'm remembering correctly from, like, the old Spider-Man story arcs, she's essentially a mercenary princess from Samekia because, she's, like, royalty, but Samekia is in dire needs of financial support. She is, like, created, like, took their military and made it a mercenary military, and so she'll go around the world doing, like, these mercenary missions for big sums of money that she funnels back to the government. So, I believe...
What a queen.
Yeah.
Queen.
Yeah.
But yeah, amazing.
It was good. I really liked it. I think the story was fantastic, and I absolutely, without spoilers, I think where they're leading for a Spider-Man 3 is a really interesting take, and I'm on board with it.
So I do have one question, and, like, please, as without being spoilery, but just, like, vibe check.
Yeah.
Do you feel like the Kraven's Last Hunt / Venom villain implementations, do you feel like they're interesting takes on those characters? And do you feel like they're given equal weight, or as with what I've seen in most Spider-Man media, as a person who grew up loving Spider-Man, as soon as you introduce that symbiote, it's game over and it becomes the sole focus of the narrative, which I think often is a dead end narratively, because yes. I think Venom is a very hard character to write, interestingly.
Yes. And you know what? They didn't Spider-Man 3 it. So Sam Raimi's Spider-Man 3, which was an absolute shit show of a movie, they did not fall into all of its pitfalls. The symbiote is present pretty much the entire game. And it's so well balanced in a way that does not feel like... it does not feel like it overshadows. And Kraven's Last Hunt is very wonderfully handled. And I fucking love it. Because in Kraven's Last Hunt, the comic series, he ends up defeating Spider-Man in combat. He steals the black suit, which is not the symbiote suit. Just his... He dons a black suit for a while based off of the symbiote suit. And Kraven wears it and becomes a brutal Spider-Man for a couple issues, and then Spider-Man gets it back, and Kraven is already he kind of defeats himself. I know it's an old comic, but in the game he still has, because what happens is there's the symbiote is present in the game. He is fascinated by it as a hunter who wants to hunt the ultimate prey, he wants to hunt, so he becomes fascinated with the suit as well. So I love that little nod to the original comics where he's fascinated by the spider in the black suit, he wants to be the perfect hunter, and there's some amazing story arc, like all the mini quests fill in the blanks in the storyline and stuff like that. So, like, if you don't do them, you still get a really good game. If you do them, you get all of these really incredible, like, layers to it, and you're like, oh, man. And they do a really good balance at making, like, some of the mini-quests are for Miles, some of the mini-quests are for Peter, and each of the characters are finding out different aspects of it and then coming back together. And they have their, like, little spider team throughout the game, so, like, everybody's kind of communicating in different ways, and amazing character work. I think it was fantastic. Easily the best Spider-Man game I've ever played. And story-wise,
awesome.
Who doesn't? I don't super care about Venom all that much, and I was way more fascinated by Kraven being in it. I think they did a really good Venom.
Cool.
Yeah. I also beat Mario Wonder the other day, and...
Wonderful.
Oh,
my. How do you like this game?
How do you feel?
On a scale of if you have a hard time with 2D Mario games, you will have a hard time with this, to just come play it, Chris, you know you want to, where's Mario Wonder at?
Ooh, you know what? If you have a hard time, so I would say like 6.5. From that point of view, right? Because the idea is, the game starts off real, real easy, to the point where I'm like, all right, it's going to be another 2D, New Super Mario Bros.? Like, those games were terrible. I was not a fan of them. They felt very bland, very dead inside, and they were just, like, pumping them out, right? But this one, after about the first world... And the first world wasn't bad. It was pretty simple, and there wasn't a lot of complexity to it. It was fun, and you get the Wonder Seeds, and everything's kind of changes it up. But after
the Wonder Seeds that I've seen people stream from that first section, even just the first section,
yeah,
I was like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, they're nuts. They're so much
fun. In a video game?
And
what are we doing?
But after that first world, it starts to really like. Take it up a notch, to the point of like, I have beaten the game, I've rolled credits, and I've 100% every single level except for one level, and I haven't even beaten that level, and it's like the ultimate secret, like you've unlocked everything, now we unlock this, like the gauntlet.
Okay.
And it is so ridiculous, I haven't even gotten to a checkpoint in that level, and I am, like, banging my head against a wall. Like, I have, like, tons of lives. I'm okay, like, with that. I've been playing as Daisy the whole time. They have no characters are different, mm-hmm. except for Yoshi's, which are like
and infants. Nabbit.
And Nabbit. Don't... Yeah, they're dang Nabbit. but yeah, been playing as Daisy. It's great. Love it. She's always been one of my favorites. So this last level is just kicking my ass, and it's so hard. And some of these like special levels, like they do a Star Road-esque area, and those cool. levels are so friggin' hard. And they like I'm losing my lives like constantly, and I need to like step away from them because they're like, okay, I'm getting tilted just trying.
Sure.
And
sure.
So I went and did some other things and came back to them and whatnot. But like this one level I cannot seem to beat. But that's the one thing keeping me from 100%ing that game. But yeah, no, I think it's one of the best Mario games I've played since Super Mario World. And for me, okay. Super Mario Bros. 3 is my all-time favorite. Super Mario World is like, as far as 2D Marios go, right there, right below it. And this one, I would say, is on par with Super Mario World, if not right below it.
Whoa.
It's just...
That is strong endorsement.
I just think there's so much... Like, it doesn't have the same level of, like, you know how, like, you'd find all these secret routes and stuff like that? It doesn't have the same level of, like, excitement when you're finding them, but it's just got a lot going for it. And the levels are fantastic. The levels are, like... genuinely like creative and imaginative, and the stuff that you're doing in them are fun and enjoyable. I had so much fun playing it. I haven't even played two player yet, which I was like, I have found out that like I've learned from reading online that the two player does not like you don't have character interaction. So mm-hmm. the new Super Mario Bros. Were famous for making everybody hating each other by murdering your friend over top of a pit and or not popping their bubbles and stuff like that.
Right.
So that by taking that away, everybody can just enjoy playing the platforming Mario game together and not have to worry about friends killing each other. So
sure.
Really, really enjoyed it. I think it's one of the better Super Mario, like 2D Super Mario games. So,
my last question:
yes,
where are you at on the badge system? I'm so intrigued by it.
The badge. I think it's solid. I think it's really good. None of them are broken, if that makes sense.
Okay.
There was one that I got really early on, and I rocked it for so many levels. To the point of like it was every time you kill an enemy you get some coins, and it would be like a regular enemy's like 3 coins, if you kill a bigger enemy it's like 8 coins, and I rocked that for the first 2 worlds, and I had easily 80 lives, or no, I had 40 lives by the time I finished the first 2 worlds, and I was like, you know what, I probably don't need this anymore. So I took it off and I switched to like one of the more active ones where like there's one where you get a parachute hat and it makes you fall slow.
Yeah.
And that one's, I pretty much rock that one for the most of the game. There are some of them that are like absurdly unusable unless like they're in very specific situations. Like one is you're always running, but if you run off a cliff, you can run in the air for a little bit, and then jump at the end of that that run. So some of them are like. Or ones like you're constantly jumping like a spring, and if you jump while like when you hit the ground, you jump even higher. And there's like some of them like that are just like clearly gimmick badges. I think I found one that's you're invisible, which means in a platforming game is terrible. But it's mostly built for those very specific levels that utilize the. But you have to use this one badge for this level, and they're fun. The levels themselves are fun because they're designed around it. You take that badge anywhere else, you're gonna have a bad day.
Okay, I like that though. It's interesting that they use them kind of as like one-off level design.
Yeah, and they use them. They use them more than once. Like each badge, like badge courses where it's like you only use one badge the whole course. And there's like 3 for each badge, and so you have a good variety of like challenge there. I find like all the base badges are pretty interchangeable. Like they don't break the game in any way, but like they just change the way you play, which is a good game design, right? Like you're not like, oh, I'm just going to use this one because it's the best one, right? You're like, well, this situation I'd actually be better not getting the jump higher one, and I'd actually be better with the when I jump wall jump, I would jump straight up instead, or like changing it up in that mechanic wise, or but yeah, it's good. It's a really good game. The level design is fantastic. The animation, oh my god, the animations on the characters are fantastic. And that's one thing that like I just killed me with the other ones, like the new Super Mario Bros, where they just had like no character personality to them. And while I've been begging for a Mario 2D Mario game that's hand drawn, Wario Land Shake It, I think is one that I scream from scream from my rooftop saying like make more of this. They still haven't done. They didn't. It's not hand drawn, but they have so much personality that I'm like, okay, I'm okay with this step in the right direction. Like even like Elephant Daisy, as I played the game as Daisy. Like every time, like she's going into a pipe, and like she's like it's snug, and she has to do like a little shimmy or whatever. But it doesn't like take any longer than normally going down the pipe, so it's like really well balanced time wise. Like just the characters, the way enemies interact with each other sometimes, or if they see you, like they'll like furrow their brows and stuff like that. There's so much personality in this whole world that it is such a fantastic play.
Awesome.
I'll speed run through the next couple ones. I've been playing It Takes Two with Chrissy. I know people have talked about It Takes Two, Game of the Year a year or two back. First time playing it, fantastic. Loving like every level is a new play style and stuff like that. We've been enjoying the story. We've not beaten it. There is clearly it's about two people who are getting a divorce and their kid doesn't want them to get a divorce. Right. And we're like, we really hope they don't just go, oh, we love each other at the end. I know we're working through it, but I really hope that it's not just a Band-Aid and we're done. And I know we're going through that journey, but we think that, I don't know, not all relationships should be about getting back together, but being understanding enough to accept our differences, and we're not going to be, not animosity towards each other, like fixing that relationship without fixing the marriage, I think is an acceptable way to look at it, but that's just us. And it's odd that we are two like engaged individuals playing a game about divorce.
Right, right.
Which is anytime.
What an interesting tension to put into your relationship.
Anytime either of us, like, we will deliberately. There's so many trust moments where one person is like clearly holding open, like, or holding a lever that is keeping a platform up for the other player. And if you drop it, they die or stuff like that. There's so many moments where like we will deliberately. Like kill the other player just for fun, for the laugh, and our response is, all right, well, you're getting a divorce. Like, and that's it's just such a great, we've been having fun with it. I beat Alan Wake, which I know was talked about in a previous episode.
Alan Wake one,
yes,
or
the first
two?
One, first one, sorry, not played the second one. The first time playing it, I think I would have liked it a lot better if I played it in the day, like when it came out. I think it struggles from a lot of problems, and I love Control. I really enjoyed the plot of it. I like the story of it. I hated the fact that like every level you start fresh, no gun, no flashlight, nothing, and you've got six of these levels that you have to go through, and this he always just loses this shit every time. And then the last thing that drives me nuts is whenever an enemy shows up, like here's an enemy encounter, these like the enemies will show up, and it like slows down time showing you where the enemy is coming from, and you're like, sweet, I know he's there. You turn the camera to deal with them because you gotta, and they always spawn another one right behind you, and it's like every time. It's not even like near the end of the game. I was streaming it, and I was like, here we go. I'm gonna get hit by a guy from behind. And sure enough, like I'm trying to dodge, but I know he's back there, and he pops out, and just like it's like to the point of like after like I don't know like 10, 15 hours of this game, and I'm like. Going like, I know this trick, and you've done it every friggin' time. Just come on, guys. Like, there's got to be something else. Like, you don't have to do it every time. So that got a little old. I beat it. That's pretty. Like, I was like, I liked it, but I don't think I'd ever play it again. And I played the remastered one on PlayStation 5. So. And then
that game's vibes are impeccable.
Oh yeah, so good. I love the.
I did play it when it came out, more or less. So I'm so far removed from it. It's been over a decade.
Yeah. The sad thing is, I probably won't be playing Alan Wake 2 right away because of how like kind of like frustrated I was near the end of it.
Oh sure.
But Alan Wake 2 has been getting really good reviews, and people are like, "This is amazing," and they're talking about it and. As game of the year, and I'm like, oh shit, maybe I do have to play it.
Oh man, that would have been such a good transition, but we have more games to talk about.
I know, there's so many games! I played a little bit of Slay the Princess. Have you ever heard about this?
I think I've heard its name, but I don't know. Could you please tell me, what is Slay the Princess?
It's a hand-drawn story, like, what is it? Narrative story, or not narrative. What are they called when they're like a choose your own adventure video game?
Point and click adventure.
No, I'm thinking. What am I thinking?
Oh,
like it's just you're just you just make select text and then the story plays out. I can't think of the
visual novel.
Visual novel. Thank you.
We got there.
It's a horror. And it starts with, like, a narrator narrating. You're walking through the woods. You're coming through the woods because there's a cabin. And in this cabin, there is a princess locked in the basement. Mm. You are going to this cabin to slay the princess. And, like, suddenly there's, like, a character being, like, the main character's voice is like, wait, what am I doing? But then you have a voice. So it's like, the hero character is like, I don't think we want to kill the princess. And the narrator's like, you want to kill the princess. And she's going to say anything to prevent you from killing her. And then, like, you talk to the princess, and she's like, oh, please don't kill me. Who are you talking to? Like, please, like, just let me live. And you don't have to, like, it doesn't have to end like this. And it's like, okay, like, clearly there's all these mixed messages. And it's like, you've got the knife. And at one point I was like, okay, we're going to escape. And then, like, I'm trying to escape the cell with her. She's gnawing her arm off to get it out of a manacle. I'm like, okay, I'll help her cut her arm off. This is cool. This is a horror game, mind you. It's beautifully hand-drawn. It's incredibly, like, unsettling. And, like, she's got, like, the big Disney princess eyes, so she's really off-putting. And, and we're leaving the cellar. The cellar door slams closed, and suddenly, like, I can't control my hand anymore or whatever. And it's like my options are kill the princess, kill the princess, kill the princess. And I have to scroll, and I find warn her as an option. And it's like I warn her, and she like ends up taking the knife from me, and she's like, I'll try and make it so like quick or whatever. And you're like, wait, what? And she just starts stabbing you, and it's just like, what? This insane, like, what is happening? I die, and suddenly I'm back at the beginning, and I have another voice in my head. I have the lover, the hero, and the narrator, and now they're all fighting, and I'm in the middle, and I'm making the choices, and it's wild. And I have not played too much. Like, I played another scenario, and it's kind of roguelike-y visual novel horror game with amazing graphics, and it's I have not played much of it, but I'm really into it.
Where'd you hear about this? How'd you come across
it? I can't remember. I think it was like what it was. I had it wishlisted on the Steam store for a long time, but I can't remember where I originally saw the trailer for it. But whatever it was, I saw the trailer, and I was like, okay, I'm in. And I wishlisted it. And then I forgot about it, and it just released, like, last month. And I'm like, oh, shit, I can finally get this. So I picked it up. And, yeah, it's it's something else. And the funny thing is, we're playing it, and I'm playing it on stream for a little bit, and a buddy of mine in chat was like, that voice actress sounds really familiar. Looks her up. Turns out, was one of the contributors at AGDQ, or SGDQ one year, and she played a bunch of different games. She's part of the Femme Fatales, Flame Fatales, which is the all-female speedrunner team or whatever that charity for. And like, he posted a picture of her in my Discord with Elijah Wood, specifying which one she was in the picture, which I was like, okay, so not Elijah Wood. But yeah, no, it's just wild. It's like, oh shit, I probably have seen her play video games then. it's really cool. It's clearly not like the biggest budget game in the world, but like the visuals are phenomenal, and I strongly recommend somebody just watching the first trailer, even if it's like you're not your jam, totally get it, just watch that first trailer. I think it's fantastic, and it sold me on the game. But that is what I've been playing, Chris, which is okay. What is that, like 40 minutes? Where are we? Half an hour.
A lot of games. I'm going to do a speed run through mine to jump off of the Flame Fatales.
Okay.
Non-game, but game-related. I got to go to the M+ Dev Conference on Friday, which is a Madison, Wisconsin-based game developers conference. Madison and Wisconsin in general have actually quite a few game dev studios. We have a PUBG studio here. We have Respawn Entertainment, Raven, they're called Roundhouse now. They used to be Human Head. So lots of stuff that's eventually found its way rolled up into Microsoft, which I think is ironic. Had an amazing opportunity to go volunteer for a day-long conference. Saw some really great talks. Met a lot of really cool local developers. Talked to them about helping get people of color into the games industry and how to help diversify the voices who are making our games. Talked to them about a little bit about unionization and labor and the Microsoft acquisition, since some of those companies are now a part of the Microsoft umbrella, right? Raven as part of Activision. Nothing like in particular, and it was all kind of like, if I was a journalist, it would have been off the record. I was there not in a way at all representing our podcast. Made some cool connections with folks, had a great time volunteering. I love getting out of my community and supporting events, and it was really cool to get to go do that at a games event. And I checked out one game hands-on, but I was actually really more busy like networking, and I'm using it to spin it up into a project for my class. I have a capstone that I want to try. I was using as a conversation starter and all that, but I'm excited. My hope is to be able to go volunteer again next year, if not find a way to become more involved with that group. And there's a lot of fodder and networking I have to do and follow-up I have to do out of it. It was incredible and also exhausting. I was zonked afterwards, and even the next day I think I ended up taking like 3 hours of naps to kind of recover from how much I exerted myself at it. But it was just a really special, cool experience to be at a game developers conference.
Yeah, yeah.
It was kind of a trip. The other thing that's not directly playing a game, but that is meaningful, is I think I've cracked the code on getting me to use my gaming rig. And that code is a monitor arm that should be arriving by the end of the year because it was on back order. And my hope is to set it up so that I can turn my monitor away from the desk portion of my desk so that it points at my armchair that's in my office and sit with a controller and have my gaming monitor pretty close to my face with a controller and like cozy up in my armchair. So that was kind of a treat to myself. I bought a kind of nice monitor arm, and I'm gonna see if that can help solve this problem I have of having a gaming rig in my office that is better than my Xbox that I never use. So that's my other kind of like games related thing. I puzzled it out. I was trying to work with a friend because I think eventually most PS5 exclusives are going to come to the PC. And so having a PC that's as good, if not better, than a PS5 already, right? I have a 3080 Ti in this thing. I want to just start playing PlayStation exclusives on the computer. And I was working with a friend to see if we could figure out a way to get, without moving the desktop computer into the living room, get the video routed out to my TV. But instead, because there wasn't an easy answer to that that was like unobtrusive and didn't just have a cord running across my floor, I'm going to try this monitor arm approach and, you know, take advantage of the gaming monitor that I bought that was like a pretty significant investment.
Quick cut in here. So I also recently got a fancy gaming computer. I built it myself. It was a real cool project. I have my Xbox in the computer room with my computer, and I stream that. I have a spare dock for the Switch in here, hooked up through the all of my Elgato stuff for streaming and stuff, and that's how I stream my games. When it comes to PlayStation, however, I still have the PS5 trapped in the living room, which is a good chunk of the way through the house. Like, they're not side by side. There's a whole kitchen between them. However, I have been using the streaming system through, what is it called? It's called Remote Play, PS Remote Play, on the PC to stream my PS5 games.
And it's into your gaming office.
Yeah. And I, honestly, like, it's been pretty damn good. Like, I have not very few, like, moments where, like, it, like, very few moments where it breaks down a little bit, and it's like if somebody else is, like, watching streaming TV or something, like, sometimes it'll slow down. But it has been pretty damn, like, I played all of Spider-Man through it. I've played all of Final Fantasy IX through it. I played all of Alan Wake this way. Sometimes I played half of Final Fantasy 16 this way, where I just, when I'm working on the computer and I just need to get some, like an hour of that game done or whatever, sometimes I'll just pop it on and I've got my controller. I just plug it in, into the PC and just go to town. And it's been phenomenal. Like, is it like the obviously the monitor I have is not better than the TV I have in the other room, and it's not putting out as like visually stunning graphics, but for what I need it for, it does it does the trick, and it is absolutely been helping me out. So I don't know if that's something that would benefit you, or if, like, I don't know how solid of internet you have and whether streaming it over Wi-Fi is going to be a practical answer, but it is an option.
So my friend's one answer, because I have a buddy who's more into PC stuff than me and is pretty technical, he was like, oh, like, get a Steam Link, but then it's just Steam games, and I have my games across, you know, I have Xbox Game Pass Ultimate, so I have some PC games through that. I have my itch.io bounty of games from the various charity bundles I've done. I have a couple games on Good Old Games. I have free games that I download through Epic. And, like, really, my, like, Steam library is actually pretty limited in terms of what I actually want to play that I don't have access to elsewhere. And so we kind of ruled out the Steam Link, even though I think, like, it would be pretty sick to Steam Link over Cyberpunk to my TV. But my computer is good enough to run it really, really well in 1440p resolution, and the monitor I have is 1440p. And I did, like, test case this without the monitor arm. We just, like, shoved everything to the edge of my desk, and, I made it a project and, like, got, like, a new Bluetooth adapter from the controller to hook up to the PC, and I got a longer monitor cord and stuff so that I can actually make this work. But, like, remembering how good Cyberpunk can look was a trip. So, and I've never finished that game, and now that the 2.0 is out, like, I'm actually interested in getting engaged in it. I started rolling a fresh character when I was testing it out. And, like, I was like, well, I'm going to go corpo this time because I sold out and I took a corporate job, so I can relate to the background of this character better and all that stuff. So it's something that eventually I can see myself curling up on my armchair that I love with a controller and just like living in the warm glow of my gaming rig in the cold winter here in Wisconsin. Some quick hits for game stuff. Tears of the Kingdom, I finally started hitting some sick narrative beats. I came back to it. The way that you get to certain parts of the map like clicked for me after having taken some time away from it. Spoiler alert, I guess. I finally am reunited with the Master Sword. And nice. That's been, yes, that was a big fist pump moment. And then listeners to the show will know that I finally have expanded my inventory slots after 80 hours into the game. I'm ready to put more momentum into that game. I'm ready to try and like play the actual game instead of like doing my infinite checklist of just, you know, mapping the depths and stuff, which has been so fun. But I'm playing KOTOR and I need to keep up on KOTOR. And I made it to Tatooine. And boy, are the sand people vicious. So I dropped the combat difficulty to easy because I felt like I was overpowered. I felt like I'd broken the economy because the version I have has this DLC where you can go get like 2.6 times as much sale value as you would with normal vendors. And I played that vendor in as many hands of whatever the knockoff Sabacc is. I can't think of it right now. Their knockoff gambling blackjack game, and I made like tens of thousands of dollars, and then I like sold a bunch of stuff and made tens of thousands of dollars. I think it ended up being like $18,000, which feels like a lot of money, a lot of credits. And like I bought two pieces of equipment from him, and then I go and like clear out everyone on Tatooine for Sabacc. We're gonna call it Sabacc. I know it's not Sabacc, and I make like a couple thousand more credits. Any one piece of equipment in this game is like 8,000 fucking credits. Anyways, I'm rolling in like high tier DLC loot gear that I had to drop 8,000 credits to get. And I'm still getting rolled by these sand people. Anyways, we had to put my girl Mission to rest. Mission just wasn't cutting it anymore. I love Mission. She's a spunky teenage Twi'lek. I always pronounced it Twi'lek. She's a spunky Twi'lek, 14-year-old teenager. This is like, just like, what if Han Solo was a 14-year-old girl? Oh, God. I think I've said this before when I've been recording on the podcast, but like, it's crazy to see how much of a BioWare game is like, the DNA's all here.
Yeah.
For what you would think of as Mass Effect. Can't be stopped from playing Marvel Snap. I just hit Infinite again, probably the earliest I've done it in a season. I am a sicko for this game. I still have only spent $3 on it. I'm not sure how I've pulled that off.
There you go.
But the game that I actually want to talk about is Venba, which is a really short narrative experience. Yeah. I played it through Game Pass. It is all about a family of Indian expats who come to Canada to try and find a better life and their relationship to one another through food. It is a short, narrative heavy experience that I think my girlfriend and I played through together in one sitting on the couch in about an hour and a half. It has really lovely puzzles related to the cooking of these recipes. The narrative is really touching and beautiful. It made me so excited to have Indian food, and it actually helped bring a new appreciation to Indian food and the cuisine, because I was encouraged to try a dish that I don't normally order, because you learn how to make it in the game, and I also brought just like a lot of love and warmth in my heart from the story that it tells about the meaning of food and the family that it tells the story about. If you have Game Pass and are interested in immigrant stories, in stories about generational change and belonging and culture and the history of a person's family and how you communicate your love to each other. I cannot recommend it highly enough, and it's something that is really approachable and fun to do with your partner no matter what their level of gaming skill is.
Chris, did you know that Vemba is one of the nominated games for Games for Impact at the Game Awards?
I didn't know that.
It's that,
but it probably is a good time to jump into the news so we can talk all about it.
Nailed it.
So let's start with that first story then. We're checking this out. You know, this news is probably posted on every nook and cranny of the games internet, but I pulled the story from Tom Ivan over at VGC, at Video Games Chronicle, trying to spread the love to a couple of different sites today in the news selection. I think, you know, I'm going to cut through. I mean, the big headline that they have is the top nominations come for Baldur's Gate 3 and Alan Wake 2, each up for 8. Spider-Man 2 with 7 awards. Wow. And then 3 titles are up for Game of the Year, all 3 of those. So that's Baldur's Gate 3, Alan Wake 2, and Spider-Man 2, all up for Game of the Year, alongside Resident Evil 4 Remake, Super Mario Bros. Wonder, and Tears of the Kingdom.
Holy.
First question.
Yeah.
Is that lineup missing anything in your opinion? Because this game, this year of games has been...
a whirlwind.
Too many games, as certain podcasts I used to listen to had as a jingle.
Of all of those games, I've only not played Alan Wake 2. And honestly, I think that while I absolutely love it, I honestly think Resident Evil 4 here is a little outclassed. But
by the rest of the games in that
group. Oh, they're just... yeah. But I don't think I could think of another game that came out this year that would replace it, if that makes sense. So
I don't feel like we talked Final Fantasy 16 at all, and I didn't get a chance to play it, but I'm curious, do you think... I know a lot of people have said that that game is either a dud or belongs in the conversation for Game of the
this
Year.
That game kind of does not belong in the Game of the Year category. I think that game struggles.
Okay.
I think there are great moments and incredible action moments, but that game struggles. And it struggles in a lot of story element places. It struggles in a lot of representational element places. It struggles in pacing. It struggles... there's a lot of problems with Final Fantasy 16. Coming into it as a Final Fantasy fan, I was disappointed more than I was impressed by Final Fantasy 16.
Okay.
And I don't think that it is remotely... I don't even think it's the best RPG of the year. In fact, the best RPG of the year is already in here for Game of the Year, and that's Baldur's Gate 3. And that was... like, I'm still playing Baldur's Gate 3, and I'm absolutely in love with that game. Everything from how they do, like, the combat being turn-based, the characters are incredibly well-written, the plot, everything. Everything about that game is good. Like, top tier. And I think that if it was... like, we've got... once again, we've got... this is like 2017 all over again. We've got Legend of Zelda and Mario in for Game of the Year right now. We've got... Spider-Man also in... that was 2018, wasn't it?
No, that was 2018, yeah.
But, like, God, look at this list that we've got.
It would have been Horizon Zero Dawn.
That's right, that's what it was.
That same year.
Yeah.
Breath of the Wild, in my opinion, ate that game's lunch.
Yeah, 100%.
But...
It's sad that such an incredible open world game got essentially overshadowed. I think that
no Starfield in that list.
Do
you have a thought on Starfield? I know you said Baldur's Gate 3 is already best RPG, but do you feel like Starfield deserved to be in the Game of the Year conversation? I'm over here having played only like a few hours.
I'm
spread too thin on games.
I want to say 10 hours of Starfield, and I think I think that Baldur's Gate trumps it in every way. I think Mario trumps it in every way. I think Spider-Man trumps it in every way. I think Tears of the Kingdom. I do. I'm not on board with... I think that it is a rough game. I think they tried to do way too much with Starfield. I think they went too big. There's a lot of problems with that game. And I think I've talked about it before on the podcast. I'm struggling to keep playing that game. I'm struggling to find the enjoyment of playing that game. And mostly it's been my chat making fun of me while I play the game. Or just making fun of, like, the stupid situations or stuff like that. Like, it is just mired in mediocrity. And while, guess what, you could probably stop, just go and explore and do stuff for hours and hours on end, I find there's no incentive to explore. There's no incentive to invest in anywhere in this world because it's just, I don't know, there's just a blandness to everything. And everything that you find is not, like, nothing is better than what you already have, like, more often than not. The only thing I get excited about finding is ammo and money, which is not, does not feel good when it's an open world game with, like, you feel like could be incredible. A buddy of mine who's beaten the game has told me that he's disappointed with the post-game stuff, which I'm not going to spoil, because he did tell me some of it. He's like, the post-game stuff is just not, it should have been part of the main part of the game, which would have made it a little bit more exciting. And that the side quests are not as good as, say, Skyrim. Skyrim's side quests, like, are just so much better written, better tailored. There's the odd one that has been fun, but other than that, it's, a lot of it has been redundant. Like, there are literal missions, like storyline missions that I've done in that game, and I've spoken out loud, this could have been an email. Like, this could have been, like, literally to the point of, like, I am just, you're making me go to a location to get a verbal piece of information that we have technology, like, why, how do we can span the stars, how do, can we not just, like, communicate to, from a planet to the guy on the space station around that planet? How do we not have that capability, yet we can fly thousands of galaxies away? Like, what are we doing here?
No, Starfield.
Starfield is not on the game of the year.
So you're feeling good about the six.
I think this list is phenomenal. And it, like, occasionally in the past I felt that the list is kind of like, oh, somebody got snubbed real hard. The only one I would say might have got snubbed, but I don't even, I've not played it, so I can't really say much, would have been Armored Core 6. And
I have been meaning to check it out, but also have not had the bandwidth.
But yeah.
If you haven't played it, you know I haven't played it. there are 31 different categories. If you want to dig into what all of the actual breakdowns of each category's nominees are, I encourage you to go find a list somewhere, give a click to one of your favorite game sites. But the things I want to call out are moving down. I know we brought up Games for Impact, so I do want to call that out. So we have Chance of Sennar, A Space for the Unbound, Goodbye Volcano High, T'Chia, Terra Nil, and Venba. And then the one other thing I want to call out is the Best Indie Game and Best Debut Indie Game categories, because I think it provides another measure of how insane this year of games has been, where, from what I've heard, having only touched a small bit of them, but I've just heard, like, the level of like insanity of how good these games are, right? Mm-hmm. Cocoon, Dave the Diver, Dredge, and Sea of Stars, and then Viewfinder, which I've also heard is pretty good, but, like, maybe not quite on the level of those other four. That's the best independent game category.
And they're so good. Well, I've played Dredge and Sea of Stars, and I know John's, yeah. I think John's played Cocoon.
John beat Cocoon. I have a friend who's upset, like, loves Dave the Diver, thinks it's incredible. The one little bit of Cocoon I've played, amazing, and, like, I'm itching to get back to it. Sea of Stars, I'm itching to get to, but it's hard to justify buying the game that I already have through Game Pass, but it's definitively a game I would want to play on the Switch.
Which is exactly what, like, I backed that game, so I just backed myself a Switch copy of it, which is, I think, the best. If I want to play it on console, I can play it on Game Pass. And, damn, that game's good. But, you know what, I honestly think Dredge is better.
And then, best debut indie game, I want to call out that 4 of the 5 best independent game nominees also are appearing in the best debut indie game, with the caveat that the folks who work on Cocoon, like, they're alumni from a different studio, right? But Cocoon, Dredge, Pizza Tower, Venba, and Viewfinder. Oh, sorry, Venba, sorry. Maybe 3 of the 5 are... 3 of the 5 are in the best independent game category.
Did you Venba play or know anything about Pizza Tower?
I'd heard something of it, but I've never touched it.
See, I watched a lot about it. I really wanted to get into it this year. I never found the time amongst all the other games I was playing. Pizza Tower is like, what if we just did Wario Land? Because Mario's not making Wario Land, and they made their own version of it. And apparently it's just amazing. As far as, like, the... And it's got, like, hand-drawn artwork. If anybody wants to look it up, it's got hand-drawn artwork that looks like somebody drew it in MS Paint, almost. And it is so rough around the edges in that way, but it brings so much charm to it. And it just looks so good. I want to play it so badly, but it's just, like... I've not found an opportunity to do so that hasn't been overshadowed by something else.
It looks... The art is giving me, like, 90s, early 90s Nickelodeon, if not Adult Swim.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
And, the hand-drawn art is incredible. I cannot believe that there's a video game that looks like this.
I know, right?
It's, I think, so about this all the time.
Grody and garish. Yeah, no, it's somebody who's put a lot of heart and soul into this game and made it look deliberately unsettling. A little Ren and Stimpy-esque.
Yes, yeah. That was exactly the 90s Nicktoons I was trying to pull. Or Ah Real Monsters of vibe, in terms of, like, the just specifically the art style, not that it's monsters, scary ghouls.
Yeah.
Let's jump into the next story. I think today is a microcosm of the narrative of the year, which is one of the best years for game releases in recent history, if not all time. One of the absolute hardest times on the industry. I know, just before jumping into the story, to circle back to one thing that came out of the MDev conference, right? Volition Studios was a 200-person studio that closed down in Champaign, Urbana, Illinois. That's pretty close to Wisconsin, right? Illinois and Wisconsin are neighbors. And I ended up bumping into a bunch of devs who were let go at that studio closure. 60 of them were lucky enough to get hired up. I don't know if I can say this. About one-third of their studio was lucky enough to find a job at another studio that was able to hire them up. But they shared that, like, two-thirds of their colleagues are having trouble finding work, right? And so that's just kind of the context, right? Is, like, in a year with that many layoffs, everyone's tightening their belts, which means the jobs are fewer and further between to go around, right? So this story comes from Aftermath, aftermath.site. For folks who don't know, it was started by a bunch of alumna of our friend Kotaku.com. I am a subscribing member. I'm paying for their journalism out of my own pocket because I want to support the work they're doing. And so I thought it would be really cool to share a news story that I saw posted there that I didn't see posted other places yet. And that is that Amazon lays off 180 employees in its games division. This is by Nathan Grayson, as I said, over at aftermath.site. And yeah, that's the headline. I think the thing that I want to take away, that there's a few bullet points I want to take from here. This is Amazon's second round of cuts to its game division, the first of which cut about 100 jobs in April. And then Amazon boasted nearly record high profit margins in quarter three of 2023, which is literally like it ended in October. Quarter three just ended.
It would have been
in October. At the end of October, it's October, November, December is Q4. So it October 1st would have been the end of Q3.
Yeah.
So they boasted nearly record high profit margins in Q3, according to CNBC. And Nathan writes, workers paid the price. Amazon has eliminated 27,000 jobs since last fall. So in a year, they have cut 27,000 jobs at Amazon and still are boasting nearly record high profits. Potentially because of that, right? When you cut costs, you're able to say your profit margin goes up. What a depressing time to be excited about an industry we love. What a hard thing to go through for these workers.
There's never anything you can say about these sort of situations that does it any amount of justice. I think just if you're in the industry and you know of open jobs, reach out to these people. I'm sure they're on social media somewhere. If you ever see somebody who's been let go, pass them around. If not, like, just give them a share that they're looking for work, because there's somebody somewhere who's looking to hire them, right? So, but yeah, this sucks.
It's brutal, and it's, you know, I think, gosh, I hope people land on their feet. It's amazing always watching how the game dev community lifts each other up and holds each other up when layoffs happen. But this year of all years, it seems like there can't possibly be a job for every one of the people that's been let go,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that scares me. I hope that things are for the best for the people who have been let go. I hope they find something soon. I wouldn't blame them if they wanted to move out of the industry after the year the industry's had. And that's a huge loss for us. And I think the other thing, right, is like, Amazon didn't need to try and get into games.
No.
They didn't need to do it.
Like, what did they put out? I mean, they've been putting out games for, but nothing that's been a serious game for years. But, like, yeah, what did they come out with in, they came out with that RPG, what was it called? New World. And that was hot for all of, like, couple weeks.
Yeah, it's an MMO.
Yeah.
My friend got really into it. He jumps from kind of big MMO to big MMO.
Yeah.
He got obsessed with it, but I think that's, like, their only...
They have, like, a Lord of the Rings MMO that's being worked on, don't they? I think...
Supposedly, yeah.
I don't know,
like...
They've done not a lot, and yeah. It seems like, despite them making lots of money, Amazon making lots of money, they're still laying off tons of people, which is just ridiculous. That it's another, yeah, it's just one of those situations where company with a lot of money invests a bunch of money into an industry that they see making money, and then realizes, oh, this is way harder than we thought, and takes a bunch of that money away, and those studios have to close or layoff mass. It's just money grubbers being money grubbers. It's gross.
Yeah. One more news story that broke today that I want to share that's exciting. It's something we can be excited about, but we won't have a ton to contribute. And by the time you hear this episode, it'll already have passed. Is that there is a Nintendo Indies showcase on Tuesday the 14th. James, what do you put the over under on us getting to see Hollow Knight Silk Song Shadow Drop or release date?
We're not,
or even just in the showcase.
I don't think we're gonna see it. Like, what are we getting hyped for no reason? No, I'm really excited for it, but I don't think we'll see it. I honestly think that they need to do a post themselves. They can't just tag on to another showcase, because the last time we saw them was at an Xbox showcase, right? The first time we saw them,
yeah, because they're coming to Game Pass.
Yeah, the first time we saw them was at a Nintendo, I believe.
Yes,
right. It was a Nintendo, one of the Nintendo showcases.
I think they were a Nintendo thing first. Anyways, pulled that news from Tom Phillips over at Eurogamer. I think the indie showcases are hard to speculate about because it's indies, right? It could be anything. Hollow Knight's kind of the one that takes up all the oxygen in terms of, like, indies that you look forward to. Is there anything else on your radar that might show up at this?
See, I don't know. And I think most of my indies I get excited about are the ones I don't know about. And they come out with something that's just, like, Dredge. Dredge was not something that I was like, I really need to play a horror fishing game. But then I played it, and I was like, oh my god, this is amazing. Like, graphically... aesthetically, just in, like, the way that game played, I was so in, and I like being surprised like that. Another one I played was Frogun, which I played at the very beginning of the year, and it played like an old, like, classic N64 platformer puzzler, and like with small bite-sized levels, and absolutely loved that. So I think that in that vein, I'm excited to see the really small teams that are putting out games. Like, not looking for the Annapurna stuff, which is always quite good. Not looking for the stuff that are known entities. I'm looking for those studios that are, like, 2 to 3 people working on a game, and it's something that I'm not expecting, but catches my eye as far as, like, gameplay. So... that's what I'm going to keep my eyes peeled for.
Sure, sure, sure. With that, we're going to close the show out for the week. James, thanks so much for recording with me. It's been a pleasure. It's going to do it for the show today. You can find us on Twitter at MNGamersPodcast. John is at JohnnySamsonite. Angie is at StellarSmalls. I'm missing in action, but if you could find me, it would be at VGOccasion. James can be found
at ButLordPrimus on most platforms, and on Twitch at twitch.tv/BLP Entertainment. Forgot how to do that for a second. Can I do a quick plug for one other thing?
Plug away.
All through the month of November, I am doing a fundraiser, the Movember Foundation.
Good for you.
So I'm growing a mustache. I'm growing a mo. And the Movember Foundation raises money for men's health, whether it be mental health, prostate cancer, testicular cancer, or other known kind of men health issues. They put a lot of money into finding cures for those cancers, finding ways to make people more aware of the mental health issues. Men commit suicide 3 times more than females do. It's astounding. And roughly men die about 6 years earlier than women do on average, and it's almost entirely through preventable problems. So I am raising money for that. If you go to my my Instagram or my Twitch or Twitter or whatever, you'll find links to my Movember on Tiltify. And please, if you have money that you can spare, I would absolutely love to try and help reach my goal of $1,000 this year. If you can't, share it. Share it. That does a lot. Like, just spreading the word around that it is that I'm doing this, and it's something that's, as a person who struggled with mental health issues and had once attempted to take their own life, I think it's really important to talk about, like, the suicide stuff. And then all the other men's health stuff is important as well. It's just that's where my passion in this whole section. Yeah. So, yeah.
Really, really beautifully put, James. Thank you for sharing that. And I think, like, please, please go donate if you can. It's really important stuff.
I'll give John the link so he can stick it in the show notes or something like that.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay. Awesome.
With that, where else can people find us? Send us an email, podcast@mostlynormalgamers.com. Find us on Twitter. Sign up for Mostly Normal Monthly at mngamers.substack.com for that upcoming Game of the Year roundup. What a year of games it'll have been. And lastly, please give us a 5-star review on the podcast platform of your choosing and share us with a friend. With that, I'm going to go have some dinner. Bye. Bye.